webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment that you saw yourself in God and God in you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution. And now, here's Glenn Klein online.
Coming to you live from the Bay of the Holy Spirit. Thank you, Robert Moore, and greetings, you beautiful humans. This is Glenn Klein online. It is hump day, Wednesday, December 7th, a date that will live in infamy. The only December 7th, 2/11, ever. Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, on night number one of the Gospel Revolution Start of Winter Pledge Drive 2/11, another historic date. And we are happy to have you along for the ride. It is a date that will live in infamy, and also infamy. I don't think that is even a word. But it is also the date of Carla's birthday. She was born on December 7th. And we're celebrating here in the Tampa Bay region where it is very nippy. It is very appropriate that the weather has shifted today for the start of Winter Pledge Drive here in the Tampa Bay region. I actually had to put on a flannel shirt this evening. For those of you logged on all over the north, north of the equator, you can appreciate that. And let's see how much our dear brother across the Gulf of Mexico will appreciate that. He's probably got the fire out in the fire pit lit in the patio of the home offices of the Gospel Revolution. Please welcome online the founder and president, the Grand Poobah, the False Christ, the Kentucky Colonel, the teacup poodle of the Gospel Revolution, Mr. Michael Williams. Michael.
Hi, Glenn.
How are you?
I am just wonderful. How's your evening going?
I have no complaints, but thank you for caring enough to ask. I'm very excited about the webcast tonight,
yeah,
as you know.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I'm pretty pumped, pretty excited. It is Carla's birthday.
Yay, birthday, Carla.
Yeah, we've had a very fun day. And has Greg Ambergy, the maestro of the Gospel Revolution, initiated the Gospel Revolution tradition on your birthday last August. I will now sing the official Gospel Revolution birthday song to my girl, Carla. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Carla. Happy birthday to you. Hope you get some tonight. Hope you get some tonight. Hope you get some cake and ice cream. Hope you get some tonight.
Ooh. Yay.
Yeah, she's had a great day and just came out of a very relaxing massage for her birthday.
Oh, wonderful.
Well deserved. And
of course.
I am going to have to provide the tea and honey this evening.
There you go.
Because it is her birthday.
Only appropriate.
Indeed. All right, so here's another. We know, Michael, that today is a very historic day in the history of the world. This is the date that in 1941, the imperial...
No, just 1941.
Well, 1941. There was... Nothing in between 1941. The Imperial Navy at the time of Japan, because there really was no Air Force, although it was an Air Force, but they launched from their decks in the Pacific and bombed the bejesus out of Pearl Harbor, and thus started the United States' involvement in World War II.
Uh-huh.
What happened to the men and women at Pearl Harbor that died in that event, as well as the men and women that perpetrated that attack from Japan on the United States of America?
You know, this is the 70th anniversary. I was actually in Hawaii on the 60th anniversary, which was right after 9/11. And they had the largest gathering of veterans from that attack were in Hawaii at that time, and also the oldest gathering that has since dwindled down in the last 10 years, of course. And Hawaii had also invited the first responders on a free trip to Waikiki Beach during that same week.
The first responders from 9/11.
From 9/11.
Yeah.
So at my hotel, I will never forget getting in the elevator, and to my left was an elderly gentleman with his cap on from one of the, I can't remember which exact ship, I did know, but I can't remember now, but the ship he was on when it was attacked there in Pearl Harbor, and to my right was a firefighter from New York, and it was just a very surreal situation where that I was in an elevator with two survivors of two of the most blatant attacks on the U.S. in the history of the U.S. So to answer your question, I guess I kind of expanded that to the 9/11 folks also, is to know that, and the awesome thing in being in that elevator was knowing that everybody who died in that attack that day, and all of the Japanese who were a part of that attack, who had died on that day and all subsequent days since, and all of those in 9/11, contrary to the comments of the Grahams and other religious leaders around the world, those people in those ships, in those towers, and both of those guys in those elevators, I had absolutely no concern about their eternal destiny, because I knew, and I still know, that the work of the cross was so powerful that it supersedes all of this, and that all of those people have an absolutely equal footing, an equal righteousness and holiness in equality with God himself, and that eternity for all of them will be exactly the same destination. Now, what that's going to look like, I don't have a clue. I'll find out when I get there. If I have any way of letting you know, I'll let you guys know. But if you beat me, you promise to communicate also. But so far, we've had no communication that I know of. Certainly welcome to it. But the awesome news is that, you know, I just have a perfect picture in my mind of going up that elevator and the first responders at 9/11 to my right and the survivors of Pearl Harbor on my left. It was just an amazing moment. So, yes, they are all equal and rejoicing now.
Of course, yeah. We know that the leader of Japan at that time was Emperor Hirohito.
Yes.
And the leader of Al-Qaeda at the attacks of September 11th, 2001, was Osama bin Laden.
Yes.
And if anybody would have ever told me that I would have had a warm feeling about Osama bin Laden's passing,
yeah,
leading to an eternal peace and revelation of God and Christ at his death, if anybody would have told me that on 2001, I would have said, you are out of your gourd. Even, yeah, in 2001, and I had come into the gospel at that point.
Right.
It was not soon before that I came to understand that Christ's sacrifice was all sufficient for Osama bin Laden and Mohammed Atta, the leader of the 18 hijackers, or the 19 hijackers that perpetrated that crime against the United States. What is the reason, Michael, that whether it be Emperor Hirohito or Osama bin Laden or Mohammed Atta or the other pilots of the Japanese in 1941 or the so-called pilots of 9/11. What is the reason that we can, with great assurance and confidence, say that they are perfect and righteous and holy and have eternal peace with God? What is the reason we can state that?
The scriptures, that is the hope. That is the reality is no longer a hope, actually. It is even faith has been fulfilled, not just hope, but faith and prayer. All of those wonderful things, which we've come to cherish, but now cherish them in a bit of a different light now. The fulfillment of all things at the cross, which was prophesied, which the law, the Psalms, and the prophets were leading us to, an understanding, concealing a mystery and revealing it upon its delivery, to help us to understand that the entire world, the entire planet, indeed every human being that ever breathed or lived on this earth or was ever conceived on this planet is in the presence of God, with no qualifications whatsoever, whether they've ever heard, not heard, believed, cursed God, loved God. This was a manifestation of the love of God directed to this planet and to the people of this planet, and He redeemed us. He redeemed us from any concern of any future judgment, any possible evaluation even. We not only do not face any judgment, no human being faces any judgment, but none of us face an evaluation of where we stand once we take our last breath.
Do we just not face judgment, or do we not face judgment, but there might be some judgment that is happening right now?
Gospel of peace, the prophet Isaiah was very clear that once God established the covenant of peace through the cross, that He would not only not be angry with any of us anymore, that He would never even rebuke us. There would be no rebuke that would come from God whatsoever. So present day, nor after we take our last breath, the power of that, when Jesus drew His last breath on the cross, all anger ceased. You know, there's a lot of people, I watched the link, that, in fact, that you sent me to today. And what a scholarly, wonderful insight that this gentleman had in his little Orthodox outfit.
Right, this was a archbishop from Canada, from the Eastern Orthodox Church, that got posted on Facebook.
Yeah.
And he looked like an Eastern Orthodox priest.
Yeah, absolutely.
But he was articulating a much more gracious approach and perspective on God than you would hear from most Eastern Orthodox or any other sect of Christianity.
Yeah, absolutely. When I came away from that, I was so appreciative of his comments. I was appreciative of his openness, the insight that he had. But I came away feeling so very proud of the gospel, because by the end of it, two-thirds of his comments were absolutely superb. They lined up with scripture, absolutely. And then the last one-third was absolutely absurd.
Exactly. And that's why, to the relative small group of gospel revolutionaries that I forwarded that email to, I said, I wish this guy was in the gospel revolution flow.
Yes, absolutely, because the continuity of his thought would be clear. And he's trying to extrapolate his position based on all things having been the same in the past. And that's what we know is incorrect about his extrapolation, which he was doing very good at extrapolating. But the flaw in the extrapolation, which shows you the power of extrapolation, but you must know that all conditions beforehand have been the same, and all conditions for the future will be the same to be able to extrapolate in a certain time frame.
Exactly. And for you guys that have absolutely no clue what we're talking about, if you want to email us at webcast@gospelrevolution.com, whenever you hear this radio show, I will forward you the link.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the key to this thing. When Mike talks about extrapolation, it's so important, is that he talks about this Eastern Orthodox minister from Canada. As Mike said, two-thirds or more is fantastic.
Yes, absolutely.
But he does not understand, and I prefaced the post of the email to the Gospel Revolution folks that I sent it to, was that I wish he was in the flow, because he said that God was never angry. And the way that he demonstrated the lack of anger was he talked about, in this interview, the examples of Yeshua's teachings and how that Yeshua never condemned the woman at the well,
right,
or the
right.
Samaritan woman, and all these people that he mentioned, which were all non-Israelis. They were all non-Jews,
yes,
who were not under the law.
Yes.
And you guys, I cannot stress this enough to you, that the reading of the scriptures, the law, the Psalms, and the prophets, as we've defined the scriptures by virtue of Yeshua, his own definition of the scriptures, and the apostles' definition of the scriptures, which is the law, the Psalms, and the prophets, the understanding of that, and the understanding that the New Testament writings are not scripture, because we have the definition of scripture, we understand that God either was very angry prior to the cross, or he wanted us to think that he was angry. He says in this interview, this Eastern Orthodox priest, that God was never angry. God was angry, folks, or at least he wants us to think he was angry. And something happened dramatically at the day of the cross, the day of the Lord, the fearful day of the Lord. I just watched Richard Mull's video, which, by the way, you guys have heard Richard talk about his teachings at his place of employment. As Richard has gone through his cancer treatment, he does a teaching on Fridays at his office, even though he's on disability and on leave. He goes in on Fridays to his office, and they call it Lunch and Learn. Lunch and Learn. And for some reason, and we're not exactly sure why, whoever is his boss has allowed Richard to share the gospel. And I'm watching, I just got this in the mail this week, Richard's DVDs. This is incredible stuff.
Oh, yeah.
If you guys want copies of Richard's CDs, email us at webcast@gospelrevolution.com, and we'll get you copies of Richard's CDs.
He's a gospel machine.
He's a gospel machine, and he talks about the anger of God. And he talks about how that anger was satiated and fulfilled and completed at the cross. This is Glenn Klein Online. We are just getting going. We want to encourage you to give us a call on this first webcast of the Start of Winter Pledge Drive 2011 at 1-800-436-3260. You guys are listening live right now. It's about 5 minutes after 9 o'clock on the East Coast of the U.S. of A. That means you're listening live. We want to hear from you tonight at 1-800-436-3260. Sean O'Halloran waiting diligently in the studio here to take your calls all over the planet if you're listening live. 813-425-5773. 813-425-5773. We've got a lot to get to on night number one, Pledge Drive webcast number one of the Start of Winter 2011 Pledge Drive. Glad to have you along, whether you are listening live or on the webcast. We will be sharing later on during the program about how you can share and how you can participate in this wonderful revolution that is happening, and the wonderful revelation that is happening all over the planet. So stay logged on. Mikey, you were talking about earlier about the Grahams of the world that after September 11th, 2001, really condemned the United States and blamed, spiritually speaking, the USA for the attacks that happened at the World Trade Center.
They did.
Yes, they sure did. Franklin Graham was, Billy Graham never did, but Franklin Graham, his son, did. And another man that did is a man named Jerry Falwell, who's since passed away, who we can now with great confidence say is in the perfect presence of God, regardless of what he said or what he believed. Another man that said that God was judging the U.S. on 9/11 was a guy named Pat Robertson, who is still around, very much so. He's broadcasting every day on the 700 Club. And recently, Pat had some things to say about U.S. foreign policy and about what God was going to have to say about our present policy vis-a-vis this particular issue. And I want to get your comments on it.
Isn't it appalling that the United States of America would try to enforce the acceptance of homosexuality on other nations, but at the same time we would not force them to take care of their religious minorities, and they would permit discrimination and persecution of Christians? What kind of a country have we got? And you know, there is a God in heaven, and he is just. Thomas Jefferson said, "I tremble when I remember that God is just." He is just. He's not going to allow this kind of thing to go on forever. This country cannot continue to violate God's principles and to make a mockery of his laws and think we're going to get away with it. And when the blow comes, it's going to be horrible.
Well, that was an unfortunate use of words from Pat Robertson. When the blow comes, it will be whatever he said. But what would you say to Pat Robertson? Michael, how just is God?
Well, just first off, I have to invoke my heritage. And I condemn this judgment out of this man's mouth. In the name of Jesus, I condemn them with the full veracity of the scriptures and the sacrifice of Jesus Christ that says that any mouth that rises in judgment, I am to condemn that. I am not condemning Pat Robertson. Pat Robertson is, in the eyes of God, righteous and holy as Bin Laden is.
Is Pat Robertson just and holy and righteous in the eyes of Michael Williams?
Absolutely. And because that view is established by the scriptures and by God himself. I have adapted that view. I've adapted that into my life and for others and for myself. And because I have done so, I feel very much more confident even about condemning such words. This is the vermin of Christianity that you just heard spewing out here.
whoa. The vermin of Christianity.
Yes.
Is there anything about Christianity, or I should say it this way, what about Christianity is not vermin?
Nothing. I would say the fact they preach Jesus, but that's what makes it even more vermin.
Because they preach another Jesus.
Yes, because they use the name, but they do not carry the understanding of the scriptures of what Jesus accomplished at the cross.
In the same way that Islam preaches Jesus.
Yes,
in the
same no more,
way,
no less.
Right, in the same way that Judaism shares a Jesus. Christianity is actually worse than Islam.
Absolutely.
And Judaism in preaching a Jesus, because they tell you that the grace of God or the love of God is extended through Christ. Islam won't tell you that. Yes. Judaism won't tell you that. They'll have some nice things to say about Yeshua. about the Jewish prophet, about the prophet that came after Moses, that came before Muhammad. They'll tell you some nice things, but Christianity, ladies and gentlemen, will tell you that Yeshua, that Jesus, Jesus Christ. Did I say that right, Mikey? Jesus Christ saved you from your sins. And now you must believe. You must confess. You must repent. You guys, you must do nothing. This is the grace of God. This is the full payment at the altar, the full payment of the stake that was established, not on the Mount of Calvary. It wasn't a mount. It wasn't on a hill. On a hill far away was the old rugged cross. It wasn't a hill. It was on the pathway. It was on the road to Jerusalem. Christianity has gotten it wrong from minute go.
Yeah. And if you know, what Paul, let me tell you Paul's comments about these things in an excerpt from what he has to say about these things. Conditional grace, conditional faith, and conditional righteousness is far more repugnant to God than no faith, no grace, and no righteousness.
Please say that again.
Conditional grace, conditional faith, conditional righteousness is far more repugnant in the eyes and the sight of God, or in the nostrils of God, than no righteousness, no grace, and no faith.
So there was a similar condemnation to that kind of perspective as what you just condemned from Pat Robertson.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Paul addressed it in so many different ways. And, you know, he talked about the gospel that Pat Robertson preaches. And he said it's not a gospel at all.
Exactly.
And he said pertaining to the gospel of those that were spying out his liberty, as Richard was reading to me today, this morning, as we were mulling things over.
I love when we mull things over.
Yes, me too. And he was pointing out to me, Paul addressing them, that he said, you came in to spy out our liberty. And he said, to whom we gave place by subjection, no, not 1 hour, but that you may continue in the grace. He said that you may continue in the grace of God. Paul literally told the people at Galatia that it was vitally important that they not give place to legalism for a single hour.
Wow.
And it was vitally important so they could continue in the gospel. And he said, we didn't give them place, not by subjection, no, not for an hour, and so that you may be able to continue in grace. So the reason that I speak so directly about these things is that I don't want to give place by subjection to Pat Robertson, not for a moment.
No, you know, we're going beyond Paul. You know, we go beyond Paul in a lot of ways, and we thank God for Paul. But we have the last, maybe 20 centuries behind us that Paul did not have. We condemn not just 60 minutes. Paul said he wouldn't give an hour to it.
Yeah.
We condemn a moment of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And a couple of years ago.
It's intolerable.
It's intolerable. We cannot tolerate it any longer. We cannot tolerate it. And a couple of years ago, you went to the great state of Georgia here in the U.S. of A. And with great fear and trembling, you taught this message.
Yes, I did, and
hold on. We're going to it.
The incredible responsibility that we have as believers to speak up when the scriptures, the law, the Psalms, and the prophets is spoken of as though they were nothing. I speak concerning the judgments that are spoken of by Peter in his writings, and I condemn them. Isaiah didn't say this is a rule, you got to do this. He said this is your heritage, that we should condemn every tongue that rises in judgment. And you should let no one stand and speak as though it is nothing.
That was Mike Williams in the new teaching series entitled A Scriptural Peace, recorded at the 2010 Southeast Conference, and is now available on the GospelRevolution.com website. This 5-CD series, A Scriptural Peace, can be yours for $40 plus shipping and handling. You can also take advantage of a special offer to download an audiobook version to your iPod or computer for just $20. For that download link, please email a request to freedom@GospelRevolution.com. That's freedom@GospelRevolution.com. A Scriptural Peace. Get your copy today.
You have a heritage.
Well, apparently it was a little less than 2 years ago, according to Robert Moore, 2010. But I love what you said. This is not a rule. This is our heritage. What is the difference between a rule and our heritage?
Well, a rule is something you've got to keep to measure up. A heritage is what you do because you have measured up. And it comes out of that which you have, not out of that which you're trying to obtain. This speaking openly and rebuking, if you will, if we can use that very Christian-sounding word, Pat Robertson or the Apostle Peter, which
exactly.
I'm sure he'd be pleased to know that he was in that company.
Now he would Pat Robertson would be pleased to know. But Peter, if he was able to know now that we were putting him in that company, he would be pleased to know, because obviously he knows now some 2,000 years later that he was wrong.
Yeah, obviously, you know, I mean, what he was saying was around the corner never came. The judgment he foretold never came, and it is not coming. And I know there are people who stand and tremble in their boots to think that a human being would have the audacity to say, this is not going to happen. But I've been saying it for 25 years now, and I will continue to say it. They have been wrong every time. I have been right every time. Can you get that? Not that I am stuck on being right. It just so happens I have been.
You know, and you could say that with all due confidence for the future as well.
And for the future, I can extrapolate because I know beyond the shadow of a doubt these conditions will remain the same regardless. And if people understand that and accept it, we can also extrapolate as to what effect that is going to have.
That might be the title of your next book. We got this book coming out called One, The Gospel According to Mike, A Christianity-Free Gospel. Stay logged on for the release date of that. But the next book might have to be entitled I Can Extrapolate.
Yes, and you can too.
Now explain to the beautiful humans how nervous you were in Georgia when you went up there to share with the folks about this and extrapolate forward, if you will, to the Gospel Revolution Summit number 2 in Tampa when you shared the teachings of James, John, and Peter.
Yeah, well, this is a whole world away from any place that I was in Christianity, and I have to drop back a little bit further than that and tell you about the night in Amarillo, Texas, when I had decided to preach the gospel of peace. This was not the first time, but this was the first time in Texas that I tried it out.
Well, everything's bigger in Texas, we know that.
Everything. And this church was packed full. It was an assembly of God in Amarillo, Texas. And it was full. It was packed. I mean, it was overflow room and all of that stuff. And I stood up and started preaching the gospel of peace. And in the distance, you could hear the rumbling of thunder. And the rumbling of thunder got closer and closer until the wind was blowing. And I'm telling you, we were in a full-fledged Texas storm.
About what year was this?
I am not even going to venture to guess.
It was it in the 1980s?
Most likely, yes.
Okay.
And,
wait, you will not believe what I'm about to share with you, but go ahead.
So I'm standing here in this pulpit. I'm telling you, this building is trembling from the force of this storm. And I'm up declaring the gospel of peace and that God is not angry. And you've never seen a storm that's come from God. God will never punish you. God has never been in a storm since the cross. God has never brought judgment on anyone since the cross. And man, the building is shaking. The lightning is striking all around that building. And I'm standing there thinking, oh my God, I hope I'm right. And, but I felt fairly confident, obviously, that I did, because I was standing, based on Christianity, I was standing in the face of God.
Right. And now, as God is my witness, and to paraphrase Madeline Murray O'Hare, if I am wrong, let God strike me dead right now. Michael does not know what is about to come. But in my research that brought the Pat Robertson quote, we have this excerpt from the Jim Baker television show with Rick Joyner that just came online on YouTube. Check this out.
This is a spirit-filled praise for this day, and I'm not trying to sell them, but if you want to get one, I'll send it to you for $20, okay, for a help our ministry or something.
Yeah.
You know, put a love offering in the envelope. Put anything in, and I'll send you this. Just call me. Do something.
Little thunder backing you up. Do you hear that thunder?
Yes.
Tell us
thunder.
What thunder means when we're doing something.
You know, lightning speaks of revelation.
Yeah.
When lightning goes forth, it illuminates everything.
Yeah.
Thunder speaks of the voice of the Lord.
Yes.
And he thundered. And I love thunder.
Yeah.
Love lightning.
Yeah.
Just don't want it too close.
One righteous act by Harry S. Truman, who recognized the new state of Israel against the council, if you know history, no one in America wanted to stand with him.
His entire staff said, don't do this.
Oh, that was
one
the biggest thunder yet. God is really pleased and upset.
Yeah, but one second level staff member agreed with him. That's all out of his whole staff.
I want to tell you, that bolt of thunder hit. You may not have heard it at home, but I want to tell you, God's brokenhearted when America disobeys him. God is grieved when his people don't understand what Israel is, what his word says.
Michael, first of all, yeah, I know. First of all, have you ever heard that before?
No, I never.
No,
have.
And he had no idea, folks. I'm still alive, so I'm assuming God has not judged my comments because, first of all, exactly what I told you was the truth, and even if I didn't tell you the truth, all judgment was taken at the cross. But Michael had never heard that before. Did you hear what Jim Baker said to Rick Joyner?
Yes, I did.
He said God was both pleased and upset. Both pleased and upset. Folks, there is no greater demonstration of the schizophrenic nature of Christianity that the once disgraced minister of Christianity, Jim Baker, could have possibly said than that.
Yeah.
God was both pleased and upset. He was pleased and upset. He was pleased and upset. So here you are some, you know, 30 years ago or so, 25 years ago, whatever it was, sharing an Amarillo, Texas. The thunder is crashing. Rick Joyner says that it is some sort of manifestation of God. What have you discovered?
I was standing there telling these people in Amarillo, Texas that this, and I never addressed the storm. I ignored the storm altogether. But this just happened to happen at this point in the teaching where I addressed these natural disasters and stuff.
Bro,
and
you ignored the storm?
I ignored the storm. I didn't address the storm at
Jim
all.
Jim Baker is a way better receiver of God's
props
than you are.
Oh, you, way better.
You
for
ig-
sure.
You
ig- and I want
you,
to
you
remain ig-
you,
terrible
you
ig- at it.
You ignored the thunder and the lightning?
I absolutely did.
Oh,
and,
Rick, Rick Joyner is not going to be approving of your message, Michael.
And you know, the there was nobody happier than I was about the gospel of peace that night. Because until you've been in the path of a Texas lightning thunderstorm, you've not been in anything. So it was, I mean, the hail started hitting the building even.
The hail. All right,
yes.
So you got hail, you got thunder, you got lightning. How is God involved in that with what is happening behind the pulpit in Amarillo, Texas?
Absolutely nothing.
God's got absolute, how much did God have to do with the thunder and the lightning that they could hear on Jim Baker's television show that we just picked up off of YouTube?
Absolutely nothing.
Absolutely nothing.
The thing of it is, see, I could have actually said that God sent that storm to prove that I was right. And but I did not take advantage of that. I certainly could have, because by the time the storm was over, I could have said, see, I'm right. And it's kind of like the guy that was walked up to the fellow in New York, and he was standing on the street corner, and he was snapping his fingers, and he said, what are you doing? And the guy was snapping his fingers, just one right after the other like that, and he said, well, I'm keeping the elephants away. And he said, what are you talking about? There's no elephants around here at all. He said, I'm doing a pretty good job, ain't I?
That is awesome.
And that's exactly.
Wait. Do a little snapping again. That was. You got a loud snap, dude.
Oh, that's, I got a snapper.
That is a serious loud snapper.
That's for sure. But that's true. You know, I've never forgotten that little story. It was told in the church 30 years ago, I'm sure. And but I had no clue that the application that it would be in and the reality of the gospel, you know, over the years is this delusion, you know, that we're doing something, you know. And it's just like somebody getting a big prayer group going together and somebody coming back and getting a better report from the doctor than they expected. Doing a pretty good job, ain't I? Doing a pretty good job.
Exactly.
It's all exactly the same stuff. It's all the same stuff.
If you guys are wondering who Rick Joyner is, and you've ever heard of Rick Joyner, J-O-Y-N-E-R, he has a very large ministry in North Carolina. And you want to talk about some lunacy, check out Rick Joyner and Morning Star Ministries. I mean, I have to say that Rick Joyner's ministry was one of the last ministries that I embraced before the gospel came into my soul. And you just taught at the Gospel Revolution Summit in Tampa, the second one, on the gospel-free teachings. The gospel-free teachings of Peter, James, and John.
Yeah.
And you are about to go to Canada here in January at the Grace Conferences with Victor Brennan.
Who? Yes.
Yeah, and you're about to teach about Proverbs entitled, What's Proverbs Got to Do with It?
Yes.
What's Proverbs Got to Do with It?
Got to do with it?
Well, Michael, what's Proverbs got to do with it?
Nothing.
Nothing?
It has nothing to do with anything about revelation of the gospel or
the Proverbs. The Proverbs.
I know.
The Proverbs.
And the Proverbs woman, and as a very brilliant man told me the other day, the Proverbs woman was crucified with Christ, and I was very excited about that.
Who was that brilliant person that shared that with you?
I can't even remember.
I don't remember who it was either. The Proverbs woman was crucified with Christ. The Proverbs 31 woman is dead.
She's dead.
Oh,
most women would be very excited to know.
If they know what the Proverbs 31 woman is all about, they'd be thrilled.
If they knew it, they'd be so glad she's dead. Oh my gosh. I tell you, the gospel is not only this incredible revelation of absolute life, it's fun. You know, I mean, where else could you get a good laugh out of the Proverbs?
It is a fun thing. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Glenn Klein Online. We are 45 minutes into this webcast, into webcast number one of the Start of Winter Pledge Drive. This is our pledge drive. We haven't met, you know, the National Public Radio, and I'm sure Canada has the same thing, and Australia, and Israel, and the other 160 countries that we're heard in can relate to a pledge drive. We have not mentioned finances one time in the first half hour. We're going an extra 30 minutes on the webcast here tonight. We will talk about our financial situation. But before we do, we want to take our first caller online. We're happy to have him. Please welcome online from the great city of Little Rock, Arkansas, the very lovely and gracious Doug Bowman. Doug.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you?
Doug, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Are you still flowing in the freedom of Christ?
Yes, Lord.
Oh,
yes, Lord.
Come on, preach it, brother.
It's all good.
It is all good, isn't it? We're laughing about all this craziness in Christianity. And you know why we can do that? Because it's in the rearview mirror, Doug.
Yeah, I agree. I was hearing you talk about what's the guy's name you were talking about just then, the prophetic guy?
Rick Joyner.
Rick Joyner, yeah. I used to subscribe to some of his literature, and he, along with Francis Frangipane.
Frangipane.
Right.
Oh, my gosh. A name from the past.
Mikey, you know them all, don't you?
Oh, my gosh. That's like, I'm having flashbacks here.
And I remember they used to preach about the spirit of Jezebel.
Yes.
You remember that?
Oh, sure. The last guy, I mean, the absolute last main guy that I adhered to before Michael came down right here to Brandon, Florida, was Rick Joyner. I mean, because he seemed like he was getting kind of free. He had some great jamming music, and they were like, I want to say extrapolating, but that wouldn't be the right word. They were jamming. They were jamming in Christianity. And it seemed good. Right? Right, Doug?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. It seemed so free and so good, and as has been demonstrated by the cut that Sean played earlier, that it could not be more twisted and more corrupt and more bizarre and more antichrist than anything that we've ever heard. I cannot condemn the teaching and the music of Rick Joyner more enough. It's not possible for me to condemn it enough.
Well, you know, when I was part of, you know, when I adhered to a bit of what he was talking about, I thought it was great at the time. The guy was just, you know, he was anointed of God.
Oh, yes. It was fun.
He spoke the word of the Lord, right?
It was like being on mushrooms in Christ. I knew you would like that, Doug.
Yeah. And, you know, in the group that I was in, when Francis Frangipane came out with that book called The Spirit of Jezebel, every woman in our church had that spirit.
Yeah.
And man, it caused a lot of problems, you know. You know, supposedly that spirit says, you know, the woman, you know, when a woman tries to control, she's got the spirit of Jezebel. Well, you know, I think all of us do that sometimes.
Wait. For sure, every woman tries to do it. Well, no, every person does it. You know what?
Yeah.
If you are a straight man right now, you have the spirit, according to the teaching of Francis Frangipane, you've got the spirit of Jezebel, according to his teaching. According to us, you have the Ruach HaKodesh. You have the spirit of holiness. That's what you have. What a difference, hey, Dougie?
Amen, brother. You know, and I want to tell you, you know, really, the where I started in the charismatic movement was through the ministry of James Robinson. You remember him?
Of course. He's on TV all the time still.
Well, you know, he wrote this book, I'm Free at Last. That was one of his first books. And then his the guy he worked with, the Halls, T.D. Hall and Dudley Hall.
Remember them.
Yep.
Actually, they're one of their sons was the preacher of our church. But I kind of grew up through that ministry, which was kind of a strain. It was kind of a mix between Baptist and charismatic, you know.
That's exactly right.
And when I look back on it, I'm like, man, how can I believe some of the stuff that I believed?
Bro, I sat in a meeting one time that our associate pastors came in to the summer camp that I owned, where we're having a men's Christian camp, a Christian's men's camp, and they preached against any sex except the missionary position. I heard it, bro. I swear to God, I heard that message. And even their disciple, the associate pastor of our church in the beautiful town of Marshfield, Wisconsin, he rolled his eyes. But they never corrected him. They never said anything.
No.
That's amazing.
Hey,
hello.
Go ahead.
I want to tell you guys, my mom passed away last week, and over the last two or three weeks, she was really suffering. She had a lot of issues, and she passed away. And I got a chance to speak some of the gospel at her funeral.
Awesome.
Wow.
And I told him I wanted to deliver part of the message, and I did, and I delivered, talked about the gospel, what I thought about it, you know.
Well, wait, what did you say?
Well, I started off in Isaiah 53, talking about what Isaiah said Christ would do, you know. He would bear the iniquity of the world, the sin of the world, and then I went to John chapter 1 and said that, okay, here's where that was filled. And particularly John said when Jesus walked up, he said, behold the Lamb of God that takes away the sin of the world. And I said, he either did that or he didn't. Did he take away the sin of the world or did he not? I believe that he did. That's what he did. He took away the sin of the world. In other words, the sin of the world has been taken away. There was another guy that preached a little bit. I could tell he was fidgeting a little bit when I was talking about it. So,
well, I got to tell you, Doug, that many years ago, after Mike Williams came to Brandon, Florida, and preached the gospel at my church that I was pastoring at, I was at my youngest son Isaac's best friend's father's funeral. And that pastor did not share that message.
Mm-hmm.
He condemned the dead man that was in the casket in front of the church to hell. And Isaac, who was sitting with me at the beginning of the service, and I told him to go and sit with Jared, his friend,
mm-hmm.
the man who is dead's son. I told him to go sit in front with him. I bent over the pew at the chapel we were in. After the pastor, this Baptist pastor, had shared this condemning message that it condemned this little boy. I mean, he may have been 10 years old at the time. He had condemned his father to eternal punishment at the hands of a loving, righteous, just God. And I said, fellas, he's good. Believe me. Regardless of what you just heard, he is good in God's sight.
But you know, a story like that, guys, just stirs up so much anger in me.
Yeah.
That when you hear something like that, you think, my God, I wish I'd have been there. You know, you know, how could anybody say that?
Yeah,
there's no love, Matt.
Doug, I was there, and I got to share with the man's son that his father was good. He was good.
And I understand what you're saying. I'm talking about, I almost feel like taking the preacher out back behind the building and showing him exactly what
he's done. I wanted to pummel him, of course. But you guys, you got to realize here that we're almost an hour into this first webcast of the pledge drive for the start of winter, and we haven't talked about, you know, what our goal is beyond sharing the gospel for tonight. And you got to understand, this is why we ask for your financial support, because more people need to hear this. I happen to be sitting behind the son of the man who was being eulogized, that was being condemned to everlasting punishment by a loving God. And I was able to share, no, your dad is good to go, Jared. Isaac, your friend's dad is good to go because of the love of Christ. This is why we ask for your support. We can't do this without you. Doug, we can't do this without you. And we're going to be sharing later in the webcast all the people that have already given to the pledge drive. And we know, Doug, that you have done that, and we so appreciate it. But what we want to hear from tonight are people that are supporting this effort. Whether you have given like Doug has already given on this particular pledge drive or not, and you want to give or you need to give, when I say need, it is in your heart to give. Pick up the phone. We've got a phone line available to you right now. Sean is waiting to take your call at 800-436-3260. Even if you just want to share your heart, that will help in a profound way. Because the radio show now is being webcast as you are listening to it, whether it be live or on the archive, to over 160 countries of the world. This is making a dramatic difference, folks. Paul the Apostle said, unless a preacher is sent, how can they hear? How can they hear unless a preacher is sent? We have been sent, not by a mandate from God, not by a vision from the Lord. We have been sent from what is in our heart. Just as Doug has picked up the phone and called because he wanted to tonight. If you have a want to, and you want to share this good news with folks, give us a call at 800-436-3260. And that's toll-free in Canada or the United States. We've got a phone line available right now, 1-800-436-3260. If you're listening any place else on the planet, you can call us as well. If you're listening live and it's 1 minute until 9:45 on the East Coast of the U.S. of A, 813-425-5773. 813-425-5773. Doug, I do not apologize for taking part of your time to promote this message, because nobody's making a living. Nobody's getting wealthy. We are just continuing in the tradition of Paul the Apostle in having a incredible desire to share this good news with the rest of the planet.
And you know, that there's, and another thing that I said as I spoke was that there's no fear in love. I mean, if God is love and there's no fear in love, how can we sit up there and preach and make people fear?
Yeah, that's
how can
sure.
we do that?
Yeah. And, Doug, let me say, I'm very thrilled to know that you have such great confidence about your mother and her eternal destination. But it's also from myself and from the Gospel Revolution and all of our friends around the world, offer you our condolences on your mother's passing. And even though you know where your mom is, I mean, it's your mom.
Yeah, that's right.
And I was 14 years old when my mother passed away, and I used to think that that had such an impact on my life because of my age. And I remember, though, one day talking to a man 70 years old whose mother had just passed away, and it was still the same impact. You know, the passing of your mom is a big deal on this planet, and thank goodness that we do have that eternal hope.
But,
I want to offer you our heart and our condolences in your mom's passing.
No doubt. I need to reinforce that, Michael. Why is that? Why does the passing of a loved one have such a significant impact on our soul?
Well, it's just the reality that it's the separation. You know, the entire process of life is separation. And this is a separation which, thank goodness, is temporary. Even death itself is nothing more than a separation from the body. And separations are difficult for humans. It's because that we are humans. It doesn't make any difference if your lover's going to be gone for the night that you're used to sleeping in bed with every night. If they're going to be gone, there's a separation. And especially this, I experienced my father dying also when I was 27 years old, and I noticed that it was not nearly the impact as losing my mom. And I thought it was because of the difference in my age, but like I said, I will never forget speaking with that gentleman who was 70 years old, and I saw the impact of knowing that your mom is no longer here. It just really is. I know, Doug, that you've just gone through this, and that's the reason I wanted to make sure that you knew that our hearts are with you, because it is, it's a big thing. It's a major thing to go through in this life.
What would be the impact, fellas, if more of humanity knew that the man that died at Calvary, at Golgotha, was actually a blood relative, far from a blood relative, our brother, who died at the cross?
As far as on death, the loss, we're still going to experience loss, the immediacy of the loss of a loved one. But no doubt we rely solely, as Doug obviously is, upon that that incredible revelation that is, as anyone can tell, is certainly cushioning his days in embracing this loss in his life. But a loss is a loss. I remember one thing I don't ever want to do is get to where the charismatic movement was. I remember the fakeness and the phoniness of people standing up in front of a casket and just saying, oh, no, it's all okay, we're fine. And that's just denial. You know, when you lose someone from this life, it is a loss. The issue is not that we don't suffer loss. The power of the cross does not stop you from suffering loss. The power of the cross makes sure that when you suffer loss, that you can endure it and recover from it.
No doubt. And there's so many levels and layers of understanding what that means. Doug, I need to ask you, since you've come into the understanding of the gospel and have lost your mother recently, what has been the difference in your thinking and your emotions of losing your mother compared to other loved ones that you've lost prior to understanding the gospel?
Well, you know, I think a lot of it has to do with the uncertainty. You know, a lot of people would feel about that, you know, but I am fully, fully confident and persuaded that I will see my mom again, you know, and that cushions the blow for me.
Yeah.
And I know, and another thing is my mom suffered a lot when she died. She had COPD and emphysema, and she developed pneumonia. And we tried to, she was in the hospital for about 2 weeks, and we thought she was getting better, and then she wasn't. And, you know, I had to sit there and watch my mom die over a six-hour period because, you know, we had to take her off life support because, you know, she had made it clear that she didn't want that, and we didn't want it either. We didn't want her to suffer. But I think the impact on me personally was I love my mother more than anything in the world as far as mothers go. I mean, she loved me. She was compassionate to me. She was kind. She was loving, and she was very affectionate to me. And all that helped make me the person I am today. And I'm going to miss her dearly. In fact, yesterday, I thought, well, you know, I'm just going to call mom. And then you get jerked back to reality, and you can't call your mom. But I was able, that confidence, I think, in where she was and that I will see her again, that allowed me to be more compassionate, more loving to her as she was dying because, I just stood up there and I just rub her head and her face and tell her how much I love her and I'll see her soon. And I told her to, you know, save a place for me. Yeah. And, you know, I was able to really minister to her even though she couldn't really hear me or understand me. But I was able to more confidently give her the comfort that she may have needed. Does that make sense?
Very much so. I have to ask you, Doug, what is the difference between, and as Michael said, and rightfully so, the loss of your mother versus the loss of other people before you understood the gospel? Because I got to tell you, I mean, a lot of what you said about knowing or having confidence in the fact that you're going to see your mother again could have been articulated by Doug the Christian.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But what is the difference between pre-gospel and post-gospel?
I'm not sure if I can... I guess I'd have to think about that because I haven't really had anybody close to me die except my mom.
Well, the thing that that I've experienced is that the initial impact is the initial impact.
Yeah.
And that's just the sense of loss. And and we certainly do have a different capacity to deal with things in the power of the gospel. But again, the gospel just does not lessen the effect, the feeling of loss. And in this situation, I think the reason that Doug is struggling for words here is just simply because there really isn't a difference. There isn't a difference initially. There is just that. There's just that sense, and those startling moments, just like what Doug just mentioned. Thank God for the gospel, but there's nothing in the world going to stop those moments from coming when you stop and think, "Oh, I need to call mom," and then suddenly that new reality has to sink in once again, and once again, and once again.
Yeah.
I got to say, and I've got to admit, that I have not had that experience, which you've had, Michael, and which you've had, Doug, where such an intimate person has gone from this life to whatever else is out there. I've had grandparents. All my grandparents are dead. I've had in-laws that have died. But not a parent. Both my folks are alive and healthy. I'm thankful to say. And everybody that I'm very, very close with and intimate with are still alive. What is that experience like, Doug?
You mean the loss of a parent?
Yes.
Well, that's a good question, but it's just a loss. It's an impact to my soul. You know, I love this woman dearly, and she's not going to be around anymore. And I'm going to miss her dearly. I mean, my wife has had this experience. She lost both of her parents, and I saw her go through a lot of pain and sorrow, because she was really close to her mom. But it was different for me. I don't know why. I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm a man, or maybe she was, you know, closer to her mother and father. I'm not sure. But you
know,
I guess
experiences it differently, Doug.
Yeah.
Everybody experiences it differently. There is no such thing as a uniform way for human beings to do or experience anything on the face of this earth. And the way you experience it is the way you experience it. And that's what is amazing about the gospel, is that that makes it okay. The gospel makes not only the passing of your mother, which, like Glenn said, I don't know, there's no words that I would have to explain what that feeling is, that the person who brought you into this world is no longer in this world.
Yeah.
But that is a very strange sensation, isn't it?
It's very strange.
Yeah. And, you know, goodness gracious, I think the thing that I always prayed was that in my days that I would offer up these requests, was that the only thing I really requested is that I certainly die before my children. So the one thing, unless your mother experienced the loss of a child, I know that for her, this was the best outcome for her.
Yeah, it was.
In not suffering the loss of a child. That one, I don't even know how people survive.
Yes, you do, Michael.
Well, I do, but not by experience. I don't know.
Right, but the people within the sound of our voice, and multiple millions around the planet have experienced that. How do they survive that?
They survive because they have to. You know, whether they know the gospel or don't know the gospel, it's still loss. And that is a part of the just life itself. Things in this life don't happen the way you think they should. It's one of the reasons that I'm going to be addressing Proverbs. Proverbs kind of lays it out that, you know, if you do this, that's going to turn out this way, and if you do that, it's going to turn out this way, and this is not going to turn out this way if you make sure you don't do that. And but life just isn't that way. And whether you know the gospel or don't know the gospel has nothing to do with whether or not you have lost your parent or your child or your sibling or anyone else. The issue is the separation. Well, let me say that once again. You know, if you're already separated from someone, that's something else. Even physically separated is going to make a difference in the impact of the loss of that parent or that loved woman, if there's already a physical distance. But if this is somebody that's in your life on a daily basis, especially in these with people that are close to you, it's going to make a difference. It's going to hurt. It's going to hurt. And
my sister, my mom lived down in South Louisiana, so my sister, it impacted her much more visually, you know, much more outwardly than it impacted me. I don't see my mom, but maybe once or twice a year, but I talk to her on the phone a lot, right? So, you know, I don't know if that lessened the impact or not, but I think it impacts, if you lose a loved one, it impacts everyone. You know, everybody's going to feel sorrow, whether they believe they're going to heaven or not. But there's that element of fear that I think is the difference.
That's what's missing, yes.
Yeah.
Uncertainty is gone. That is the comfort that we have in that. But loss is loss.
Right.
And and especially the loss of someone close to your life. I think that it is quite possible that the rate that you begin to absorb and recover from that loss, the gospel, I do know the gospel gives us the ability to accelerate the recovery of loss, for sure.
How do you know that?
By experience. That's what I'm telling you. That just like I would say, by virtue of the fact that I don't know how anyone endures the loss of a child, I'm saying that because I the thought of having to go through something like that is just mortifying, and it is for any parent to think that they would have to face such a thing, no doubt. But obviously, people do go through it, and they do recover. They endure. If they don't recover, they do endure. The awesome thing about the gospel is that you can recover. I know people who suffer from the loss of a child or a parent for their entire life, and they never recover from it. But the hope of the gospel is not that the loss will be minimalized. There's no way you can minimalize the loss of someone close to you. But the duration and the impact of that loss upon your life certainly can be shortened. That I totally believe that the gospel has the power to do that.
All right, well, Greg, or Doug, thank you so much. We're experiencing some technical issues right now.
Yes, we are.
As you folks can hear. Doug, you still with us? Doug is gone.
Yeah.
We love Doug. Doug
Thanks,
Roman.
Doug.
Doug has already contributed to...
We love you and your mama.
Yeah, we sure do. And more importantly, God and Christ loves your mama.
Absolutely.
And you. And now let us go just north of Little Rock a little bit to the maestro of the Gospel Revolution, to Cincinnati, Ohio. Please welcome online Greg Amberger. Gregory!
Glenn, you must have gotten your geography in public
just
school.
Just north of Little Rock? Jesus, Mary and Joseph.
Is Little Rock, is Cincinnati not north of Little Rock?
Well, it's northeast.
Like east, east, northeast.
Well, compared to Calgary or Toronto or somewhere.
Well, yeah,
no, Calgary would be north.
Beijing? Oh, we're right down the street.
Gregory, you had some surgery today. How are you feeling?
This one wasn't as... they did one eye last week and one today, and this one hurt a little more, but everything was great. Everything's fine, and...
Oh, that's good.
Dandy.
Did you hear my continuation of your birthday tradition to Carla earlier this evening?
No, I didn't.
I wished her a happy birthday in the inimitable fashion of Greg Amberger.
Oh, okay. All right. Some cake and ice cream?
Cake and ice cream.
Cake and ice cream.
There we go.
What's on your heart this evening?
Well,
in America's heartland?
To make a pledge and just to say that you know, this is a pretty special work that especially you two guys are doing.
You too.
Somebody like me.
You too. You too. You're involved.
I need the gospel just in order to get close to being sane.
You need the gospel in order to function like the rest of us.
Yes. Yes.
As we all do.
Yeah, I think for people who were raised in a real atmosphere of you know, do good, get reward, do bad,
yeah,
get beat, as Mike would say, I think
in other words, a serious Christian upbringing.
Yeah. Where everything is the knowledge of good and evil. That's good, that's bad, you know, and that action's good, that action's bad. You need the gospel for me. Just has gotten me at least a little bit closer to sanity.
Yeah, I hear you.
I'm not claiming to be completely sane.
No,
process, Gregory. That is for sure.
I appreciate that. But why, Michael, could Greg say that? That it's gotten him a little closer to sanity. What can we hang our hat on about that comment?
Well, that is the stabilizing force of the gospel. The gospel is directed at the mind
for sure. The mind and the emotions, the way we think and the way we feel, the way we think, the way we feel, the way we think, the way we feel, the way we think, the way we feel. That is what the gospel is directed at. The power of God is here to help to infuse with the power of God the way we think, the way we feel, the way we think, the way we feel. And that is the only thing that the power of God is here for, is to help the way we think, the way we feel. And to be able to embrace life as it really is. And believe me, Greg, oh my gosh, I know. Now, my parents did not raise me in that. I very quickly adopted that into my thinking when I was a child by a visit to Vacation Bible School when I was 5 years old. But I know that the impact of being trained in to think that way all the way from birth, as I know you were, that that impact is quite profound. And
yeah, and it's amazing. And you revert to it.
Yeah, you do.
If you don't, if you don't keep the gospel in front of your face sometimes, or
we all revert. You guys, to whatever we have been trained in from day one. That just, I mean, you can't get any more human than that.
Yeah, the thing that most, I think, motivates me in life is guilt, because that's the way I was raised.
Yeah.
I'm not necessarily saying just my parents. I'm talking about my religious tradition.
Do you think that's true still to this day?
It's becoming less and less more of a motivator for me.
Yeah.
Because I recognize it now when people are doing it to me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so it has much less power over me than it used to.
How, on a scale of 1 to 10, are you aware of how much guilt motivates you now?
I don't know. I'd say it's pretty high, 7 or 8. But there was a time, Glenn, when if a preacher told me to do something, I was just going to do it.
Yeah.
Because they were the man of God. I was taught, I could be guilted into doing, and I was guilted into doing some incredibly stupid things in my life.
Anything you care to share right now? Just one thing?
Drop out of college.
Okay.
That is
something.
Because
that
a real manipulative preacher that I knew needed a music director and a youth pastor in his church, so he talked me into dropping out of college.
That is something that Doug Bowman, who preceded you on this radio show, could totally relate to.
Yes. I relate to what Doug was saying a lot. Guilt has way less power over me, I think, as a direct result of what I hear on these webcasts every week and the conversations I have sometimes with you guys on the phone.
How often do you listen to the webcast?
I'm pretty sure I've heard every one of them. I don't always listen live, but I don't think I've ever missed going back and hearing one on the archive.
Is it because you love Michael and me so much?
No, not really. Because I barely knew you guys when I started listening.
Right. You didn't know us at all.
I didn't know you at all, right. And so for me it was something that makes my heart happy.
Yeah. Well, that's why we're here. That's the reason that we do what we do, is because we know that people's salvation is at stake.
And not their redemption or their
absolutely
eternal destination,
not their redemption,
but the salvation of their soul.
The salvation of their soul is at stake on a daily basis.
Oh wait.
And this is that we can do to infuse that into someone's mind and into their heart. And here's the thing, Greg, is that this is the wonderful thing also, is it's not my job or Glenn's to assess how far you have come. It is just that you can stop and observe how far you've come.
I was just going to say,
yes.
Greg, could you have possibly imagined yourself trying to truncate the discussion to correct Michael that salvation and redemption is a difference?
No, I was only saying, I wasn't correcting Michael. I was saying that for some of my friends who might be listening in for the first time tonight that thought that didn't know what he was talking about yet. That because when in my tradition, whenever we said salvation,
yeah,
that was an all-encompassing word that it didn't have anything to do with the salvation of your soul, your mind, your intellect, your emotions. It had to do with your eternal destination in heaven.
All right, so Greg Amberge calling in on this radio show. How would you define the difference between redemption and salvation?
Well, redemption is the work that Jesus did. It's done. It happened. It's historical. And salvation is a process of understanding redemption and its application in your life.
Very well put.
Yeah, I was going to say, Michael, could you have any disagreement with that statement?
I have nothing to add.
All right. That's good. Well, when that happens, Greg, it's time to say goodnight.
All right.
I know.
I'm going to PayPal right now and make a donation. So.
Oh, nice. So you want to share that donation?
I'm going to give a couple $100.
Nice.
Thanks, Greg. We really appreciate
it. I'm going right now to do that.
Love you.
Okay. Love you guys, too.
All right. Bye-bye.
There's Greg Amberge, who had eye surgery today. He once was lost, but now, like the rest of us, he's found. Michael is going to Calgary, Alberta on January 27th, which happens to be my eldest son's birthday. Joseph will be 26 years old when you are standing in the Carriage House in Calgary.
Yeah.
27th through the 29th, if you are anywhere close to Calgary, you want to get over to the Carriage House and go to the gospelrevolution.com website for all the information about the Grace Conference. Victo Brennan and the gang will be there. And apparently you are going to be teaching on what Proverbs...
What's Proverbs got to do with it?
What's Proverbs got to do with it? Got to do with it. All right.
I may have Aretha there with me.
Aretha Franklin will be there. Or maybe not. Well, she'll be there in spirit. We know that. All right. So we promoted this webcast. We're going to take a couple minutes here to allow you to describe the condition that you found yourself in the 1980s when you were sharing the gospel of grace, the gospel of peace, that God's hostilities had been complete. The cessation of hostilities had been fulfilled at the cross.
Uh-huh.
And, well, let's take you back to the church that you were ministering in Michigan, in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Uh-huh.
And you were, and you were going there about once a month basis. The church went from about 100 to 500 folks. On your visits, and what happened on that particular Sunday morning?
I don't remember the exact numbers where they started and where they were the last time I was there. I just know they were on a trajectory that was really amazing. That's the reason they kept having me back in. Is that lots of people were joining every Sunday that I came, every time that I came to do a seminar. A short time before that, I had been down in Lakeland, Florida, and I was teaching in Lakeland. I can't tell you that I remember the church that I was in. I think I know whose church it was, but this stuff just kind of runs together after a while.
Carpenter's Home Church.
Yeah, I think that's where I was, actually. And
you were the precursor to Roddy Howard Brown.
There you go. And in that session, I was teaching on, I think it was teaching on healing the brokenhearted, and was referring to things that could break someone's heart, and which I was doing a much more now application to those verses than a fulfilled application to those verses at the time. And I brought up Jimmy Swaggart, and because I had read it in the USA Today, and I had heard Pat Robertson speak of it also. Jimmy Swaggart, who was embroiled in his controversy at the time of his sex scandal.
Right, and just to give you guys a perspective, this is about 1988, yeah. Somewhere there. So it's about 23 years ago.
Yes.
23 years ago.
Teaching grace and peace. In full swing, but had not come to teaching the redemption of the world.
Right, right. You were teaching the gospel of peace, the gospel of grace, but you had not come to Brandon, Florida, and sat in my living room.
Right.
And shared with the planet that the entire world had actually been redeemed through the blood of Christ.
Yes.
But Swaggart had his sex scandal, and I mean,
yes, he did.
You guys, if you've
and
been.
And Jimmy Swaggart was just a icon to me, you know.
Me too.
I didn't have any contact with Jimmy Swaggart whatsoever, had no relationship with him whatsoever. So, here I was in Grand Rapids, Michigan, sitting on the platform, there with Pastor Vanderklok, and someone, and the church was just packed as it always was when I was there speaking. And someone came down the aisle and came around to the side and walked up on the platform to me and kneeled down and said, "Michael said you have a phone call in the office." And I didn't want to leave the platform, so I asked, "Well, who's calling?" And they said, "Well, it's Jimmy Swaggart." And there was no one more surprised that Jimmy Swaggart was calling me than me. And so I came off the platform and went back to the offices there in the church and took the phone, and I took the phone and said, "Hello," and I said, "Mike, this is Mike Williams?" And I said, "Yes, it is." And he said, "This is Jimmy Swaggart." And it really was Jimmy Swaggart. there's no way you could disguise that voice for sure. And not after having listened to him lots of hours. And he was very gracious, very, very kind, and told me that he had heard that some of his staff members had attended my meeting down in Florida. And he said, "I appreciate what you do." He said, "I appreciate your teaching." And he said, I know you're trying to help people understand the grace of God. And he said, "I really appreciate that." He said, "But I got something I got to ask you." And I said, "Well, sure, what?" And he said, "My staff members told me that while they were there that you had said that I was molested as a child." Excuse me. And he said, "I just want to know where you got that from." And I was just absolutely dumbfounded that he even asked the question. I said, "Well, Jimmy," I said, "it's in USA Today." And it was in USA Today just this last week. And Pat Robertson just said it on 700 Club. And he said, "Yeah." He said, "I know." He said, "I've got a lawsuit against Pat now."
And, I wonder how that lawsuit was finally settled. But
I don't know. Whether he actually had a lawsuit or not, I don't even know.
Nonetheless.
But he told me he had a lawsuit against Pat at that time. And so he told me, he said, "Mike," he said, "if you can help me," he said, "I'd like to get this corrected." And I said, "Well, I don't know what I can really do." I said, "I can't, you know." I was inferring that I couldn't supersede Pat Robertson and USA Today. He told me that he had never been molested. He said, "I'd love to have an excuse." He said, "I understand you were offering that as a means of understanding why I did what I did." And he said, "I have no excuse for what I did."
Right. He was saying that he appreciated your... You guys, I know that there's a lot of you that are listening right now that cannot appreciate what was happening all over the world when the Jimmy Swaggart scandal hit. You're talking about, at the time, the world's most effective
productive evangelist as far as Christianity is concerned. You don't understand what was happening.
He had the largest listening audience of any human being ever on the face of the earth.
Listening and viewing audience.
Yep.
So, all right, so they pull you out of the service, and you pick up the phone, and he says, "Hey, Mike, this is Jimmy Swaggart."
Yeah.
What was your thought right then?
I don't know that I had any. It was just, as I've said before, I don't use the term surreal that often because I don't have a whole lot of surreal moments, but that was one of them for sure. And
all right, so the worship service is going on at this church in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
And I can hear the worship and the praise, and here's Jimmy Swaggart on the phone.
And you're on the phone with Jimmy Swaggart, and he says to you that I heard you say that I was molested as a child. This was a message that was recorded not 45 minutes from right here in Lakeland, Florida.
Right.
And he wanted you to correct the record, and he also appreciated the graciousness of which you shared that.
Yes, he did. He expressed both of those things and asked me if I would help him to correct the record. And I said, well, I was just simply repeating what was in the USA Today and what I heard on Pat Robertson say on the 700 Club. I said, I think really that you should approach them. If you want to get to the root of it, I said, I don't know that I can really be that much of a help to you, but I'll certainly pass on the information, you know, to the little group that comes and hears me, which, I mean, they were substantial groups, but certainly not the audience that Pat Robertson had, nor USA Today,
Nor what Jimmy Swaggart had, needless to say,
prior
to this.
Yeah, I mean, from him would have been much more sufficient than me trying to defend
prior
him.
To the scandal hitting. But what did he have to say, Michael, about the message of grace that you were sharing?
Oh, he just said he appreciated it, and he really didn't expound on it any more than that. And he just said that he appreciated what I was doing and the message of grace that I was trying to present to people. And that was pretty much the conversation. And he apologized for, he said, I understand that I've interrupted your time there at the church, and he said, I appreciate you taking my call, and wish me the best, and that was the end of the conversation.
All right, so last week I'm watching Swaggart's telecast. Now you got it. Now fast forward about 20 years, folks, 23 years, and Jimmy Swaggart is now back on international satellite television. And he's sharing consistently what he calls the message of the cross. And he does. I mean, he shares the story of the sacrifice of Christ. And he tells the story this last week that he got a call from Franklin Graham, the aforementioned Franklin Graham. And he says that he has never spoken to Franklin Graham before.
Well, we're just all phone buddies now.
Yeah. And Franklin Graham says to Jimmy Swaggart, Brother Swaggart, I want to thank you. This is just last week I saw this. And Jimmy Swaggart said to Franklin Graham, for what? And he said, you are the only one sharing the message of the cross. And Swaggart, again, being generous and gracious, he said, no, Brother Franklin. There are many people. He said, no, Jimmy, you are the only one with an international voice that is sharing the cross. And, of course, Swaggart goes on to share the message that he has shared and is sharing right now at his congregation in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, that is being broadcast and webcast all over the world. But in that time, Michael, when you heard from Jimmy Swaggart, you also heard from people all over Christianity, like Kenneth Copeland, Gloria Copeland, Kenneth Copeland's wife, Benny Hinn. You guys will recognize these names, depending on how involved you've been in the media and in Christianity. Joyce Meyer, Joseph Prince, Carlton Pearson. These are people that at some point had given your teaching credit.
The Robertsons.
Pat Robertson, yes.
No, I'm sorry, not Robertson. Roberts.
Roberts Learden.
Oral Roberts.
Oral Roberts, sorry. My bad.
Earl's, got too many R's. Roberts, Robertson, Robertson.
Or Earl and Richard Roberts.
Yeah.
And many other folks that, in fact, I mean, Benny Hinn, you guys know Benny Hinn. I mean, he's the worldwide acclaimed healing evangelist. What did Benny Hinn say about the teachings that he had heard about the grace of God at that point?
Benny and I were guest speakers out in Palm Springs, California. And he came into my meeting. I was doing a morning session, and he came into that meeting and sat through it and was quite impacted by that. And he, for at least 6 weeks after that, on almost every broadcast that he had, every time he went on the air, it was the same thing. And he told people, he said, I heard a young man share on body, soul, and spirit, and never in my life have I spent 15 minutes and learned more about body, soul, and spirit than what I did from this young man. If you are ever within 100 miles of where this young man is doing a meeting, I'm telling you, it will be worth your time.
Benny Hinn said that. Benny Hinn said that about your teaching.
Yes, and he did it repeatedly. It's about the same time, though, that Marilyn Hickey was on telling everybody that I was having sex with the guy at the tape table.
Wait a minute.
On international television.
Marilyn Hickey, another well-known international minister of the so-called gospel, is on international television condemning you for some sexual proclivity that she deems indecent.
Which was not happening.
Now,
I mean, that's, I,
wait, yeah, right.
If they had, there's so many things if they'd have just known. But I was never accused of anything that I actually did.
Well, that's convenient, and that works out well. All right, so we know, and you guys have heard us talk about Joseph Prince, and you heard last week Steve and Aaron Essery, who just wrote the book, The Hour in Which We Least Expected. Whether it be Kenneth Copeland or Joseph Prince or Carlton Pearson or Kenneth Copeland or Benny Hinn or whoever, a lot of these people gave you credit from time to time and certainly gave you credit personally for the revelation of the unconditional love of God for humanity, the grace of God,
gospel
of grace.
Yeah.
In no uncertain terms in the past.
Oh, absolutely.
And now they will not. Why do you think that is?
Ooh, I guess you'd have to ask them. I certainly can understand if they see the direction that Mike Williams' ministry went after that, not only the gospel but also my coming out to the world on the world stage, if you will, that I was also a gay man. They pretty well ran for the woods pretty fast. But leave long before I ever came out that I was gay.
Right, but since the time that you have announced to the world that you are, as Pat Robertson said earlier on the webcast, thank God we have this on recording. He said a homosexual.
Yeah, homosexual.
He said a homosexual.
No, he said homosexuality. It's six syllables. I counted them. Very distinct, separate syllables.
Since that time that you have articulated to the planet that you have a particular sexual orientation or proclivity, people, as the ones that we've just mentioned, have run for the hills. Even those that would say that homosexuals are gay people, lesbians, transgender people, even those people would say they're cool with God, but they will not attribute their understanding of the gospel of grace and peace to a homosexual man. And we know that's where, we know, folks, we know. You guys that are contributing and have contributed to the gospel revolution, we know this is where they learned it. Why won't they attribute that to you, Michael?
Again, I think you're going to have to call them, Glenn. I just don't know. I don't have a clue. I think the thing that I'm pleased with and myself is that it's irrelevant to me. And I know there would have been a time in ministerial days that would not have been okay.
How much concern do you have with having credit for the worldwide sharing of the gospel of grace and the gospel of peace? What is your heart telling you that your mind, your soul is perceiving about the level of accommodation or appreciation for the sharing of this message?
Zip.
Really?
Yeah.
You don't give a rip.
It's non-existent. In all honesty, it is non-existent in my heart. And I honestly, I get very excited when I hear somebody else is doing it because as everyone knows, I still have a issue with a stage fright. And even though it is certainly different than it ever was before and diminished a great deal, I still don't look forward to being out on stage and in front of people. And I have always looked for someone to do this other than me. And anyone that knows me very closely knows that that's honest truth. I love when I'm speaking, I love it. Before I'm speaking, I dread it. There's never a time that I am comfortable with doing that. And now, certainly, like I say, it is certainly not the way that it used to be, but it has never gone away. So there's that element that I really wish. I'm kind of glad that I don't get it. So I don't know that it is from the impact of the gospel that it means nothing to me, or that I'm just really glad that people aren't talking about me where I'll have to go someplace and say something. I don't know which one it is.
Well, let's just say for the sake of discussion, and we're going to wrap this up pretty quick, but let's just say for the sake of discussion, the reason that these people who would readily, some of them, only some of them would admit that gay and lesbian and transgender people are perfectly equal in the sight of God. Let's say for the sake of discussion that the reason they will not give you credit is because you have come out and said that you are a man that is sexually attracted to other men. How does that impact the message of the gospel?
As far as I'm concerned?
Well, no. Excuse me. Not as far as you're concerned. As far as the scriptures are concerned, and as far as the gospel is concerned.
Well, number one, I mean, if they're sharing the gospel, regardless as to how much progress the gospel has made in their heart, the gospel still has its same impact regardless.
But it's been really funny because if there is if there's been one thing that has been a sure sign of the impact of the gospel in people in my life, it has been that issue, and it's watching it become a non-issue to people that it was a huge issue to, including Greg Amberge.
Including Glenn Klein.
And Glenn Klein, I mean, this is, but I never addressed it as okay, this is an issue, and if you really believe the gospel, you know, this is how you will see this or that. I just don't engage in that at all because I love the power of the gospel, and if I start measuring to what degree someone is in the gospel, I become a judge of the gospel rather than just someone who shares the gospel.
You guys, you've heard me share this story before, but when Mike came down, the first time I ever met Mike Williams, Mike comes down to share with my congregation, and I had been a crusader against the gay rights movement. And so, knowing Mike's history as a guy that had, at least around the world, had proclaimed his deliverance from homosexuality.
Well, I did it on the 700 Club.
You sure did.
With Pat Robertson.
And you did it with my friend Sid Roth on the Messianic Vision.
Yep.
Sid's greatest selling cassette tape of all time. I was very well aware. And I was aware of my stance against the encroachment of homosexuality in our culture here in the United States, and specifically in my industry of summer camp. And I remember exactly where we were sitting. It's not 5 minutes from where I'm at right now. And I looked at you, and I said, Michael, what about this gay thing? And you looked at me, and you said, Glenn, I'm as gay as I ever was. And I looked at you, and there was zero condemnation in my heart. And I zero. And you guys, you don't understand, except if you've been listening to the show for a while and you've heard the story. You have no idea what I did to try to stem the tide of the gay rights movement and the American Camping Association. You have no idea. And when there was no condemnation in my soul towards the man that was sitting across the table from me at this outside patio right here on State Road 60 in Brandon. And I knew something had happened to me. This is speaking of the power of the gospel. You guys, there's a power here. The power of God is not to reestablish your financial viability, to heal your relationship stability, to make you perfect in the eyes of your coworkers and your family. The gospel is here to affect your soul. The gospel, as Michael said earlier, is here to affect the way that you think and that your emotions react. And that, as we have found over these many years, is true.
Yeah.
We can't recommend it enough. This is why we are almost 30 minutes overtime on the first night of the start of Winter Pledge Drive. This is why we're asking...
45 minutes overtime.
No, that's in the old time.
Just wondering which plumb line were you
No, the plumb line starts at 8:45. But we're it doesn't make a difference. We're way over time. But this is why we're asking for your help. This is why guys like Doug Bowman and Greg Amberge and the people that I'm about to announce support this effort. This is why we're asking for your support. This is why I'm asking Jeff Robertson, the administrator of the Gospel Revolution, to post on the homepage of gospelrevolution.com how you can help and what you get for helping during this quarterly pledge drive, because it's not up there right now, and I don't have time to talk about it. So, Jeff, please put it up on the homepage, however you want to handle it. But I will tell you that our goal is about $11,400-plus over these next 21... $11,400! That's what our goal is over these next 21 days. and we're getting after it.
Yeah.
And our goal for one time or additional monthly pledges is $700. $700! You listen to Jimmy Swagger right now, you listen to Pat Robertson or Rick Joyner or whatever, and they would say, based on our request, we are a frickin' joke. We don't give a rip what those guys say. Here's what our total is right now. In night number one, webcast number one of the Winter Pledge Drive, we are at $1,515 in one-time gifts, $435 in new or monthly
wow.
pledges. Yeah.
It's amazing.
Which for us is fantastic.
It is.
I know. And this is my favorite place. This is my favorite place of the pledge drive because I get to talk about all these beautiful humans. Want to thank Greg Ambergy from Manville, Ohio, for his $200 pledge. Who called earlier? George Howell from Monongahela, Pennsylvania. Tom Tonsky from Canton, Ohio. Mary Lou Kustra of the Tampa Summit from Tampa, Florida. Craig Davies from Chipley, Florida. Alan Davis from Chipley, Florida. Billy Thompson from Wachuca City, Arizona. Robert and Linda Parks from Mobile, Alabama. Bill and Jeannie Schultz from Pollock Pines. Bill and Jeannie Schultz from Pollock Pines, California. You know what that just we have repeated these names.
I know.
Time after time after time. Pledge drive after pledge drive. It's the same beautiful humans that are supporting this effort. We'll talk about that in a second. Doug Bowman, who we heard from earlier this evening. Doug, we love you from Little Rock, Arkansas. Mary Kustra. Not to be confused with Mary Lou Kustra from Ellijay, Georgia. Steve Stredwick from Whitehall, Montana. I've been to Whitehall. Gene Davy Duck from Castor, Alberta. Mike and Letitia Kolb, also of the Summit Number 2, from Daytona Beach, Florida. Carrie and Rita Whiteman from Whitehall, Montana. Leroy Bayrill from Marshfield, Wisconsin, my former stomping grounds. Gene Giglio from Opelika, Alabama. Tom and Linda Wilby from Fredericton, New Brunswick. Jerry and Susan Berman from Longwood, Florida. Wayne Jensen from Bingham Lake, Minnesota. Deidre Simpson from Kelowna, British Columbia. Pastor Ted, where the heck are you, Pastor Ted?
He's on sabbatical.
He's on sabbatical. We miss you. From Decatur, Alabama, Arthur Wirch from Brandon, Manitoba. That's way up there. And also from Canada, Dwayne and Ruth Daku from Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, Canada. Oh, my God. You guys, these are the perfect human beings, just like you are. These are the perfect human beings that are supporting this effort. That's it. You can't turn on the 700 Club. You can't turn on the Jimmy Swagger Telecast and have in 6 minutes the people that have contributed to one night of a financial request. But we can. And we love it, Michael.
And we're proud of it. Yeah, no doubt. And, goodness gracious. And of course, Mary Lou Kustra is new on that list.
She is new. And by the way, Mary Lou and Mary Kustra, the separate beautiful humans, were significant donors to another so-called Grace Ministries that was mentioned in the e-newsletter. If you guys are not getting the e-newsletter, just go to gospelrevolution.com. And just enter your email address in the upper right hand corner there, and you'll get the e-newsletter.
Oh yeah.
There are so many ministries, Michael, that have mimicked. I can't say our teaching. I'll say it this way: your teaching. That would only take it so far, like Joseph Prince,
share with the beautiful humans, Michael, just in a couple of minutes here. We're way over time anyway. Share with the beautiful humans your experience with Joseph Prince, the great minister of grace, coming to you live from Singapore.
Yeah. Well, that's also been a few years ago. And again, I can't tell you exactly when, but it's been at least 10, between 10 and 15 years ago.
But I'm Joseph sure. Prince, who just was at Joel Osteen's church, not yes. too far from you in Houston,
uh-huh.
at the, what's it called? The Lakewood Church. Right. That's all over the world. It's got 25,000 or 30,000 people as a member. He was just an honored speaker.
Yes.
And they had him on the telecast.
Yes.
You were in touch with Joseph Prince, weren't you?
Yeah. Joseph listened to everything that I had on the gospel of grace and the gospel of peace. And as a pastor, he was calling me for a period of time, on a weekly basis, and reporting to me what he had just taught and asking if it was okay, and asking if he had done it right.
Right, that's what he meant by okay, right? If it was an acceptable teaching.
Yes, is this teaching, is this grace? Because he didn't know what grace was. And he did trust that I understood what grace was, and he was calling me. I remember one in particular. He was so excited. He called me, and it was on Sunday, and he called me on his time, just an hour or two after his Sunday morning service, and he was telling me what he had taught, and he told me, he said that he told the people that there were only two people that Jesus said had great faith, and that was the Samaritan woman and the centurion. And he told them, he said, the only way that you can have great faith is if you are not under the law. It was a great point at the time, and that certainly is where he settled in to his understanding. And at the time, I was exactly the same place. I was teaching grace that would get faith to work. And, of course, the understanding of the gospel certainly moved me beyond that or away from that and forward. But at the time, that was Joseph's understanding. He hasn't moved an iota from there in all these years. He still is sharing grace as a revelation to get faith to work for you. And it brings in money and people like crazy, believe me.
Right. You experienced that personally, didn't you?
Yeah, it was an incredible influx of money and people when I started teaching the grace to get faith to work.
Grace for the believer.
Yes, and it was for the believer to operate their faith in. And in fact, my first teaching series on it was Grace, God's Ability, which very conveniently Jim Richards titled a book by that about a year later.
Oh, there's another name, Jim Richards.
Who just happened to come up with the title that was the title of my series that he had listened to, Grace, God's Ability. And he never once said a word to me. I mean, I was still in contact with Jim when this was going on, and at least some contact at the time. And
that's before he produced a video directly calling you out. What,
yes,
Michael, what is wrong with these people?
It's just called religion. It's called legalism. And it really warps the brain. I mean, you cannot acknowledge someone else. To acknowledge someone, especially who's gay, is to somehow to associate yourself with homosexuality, which makes me wonder why someone would be afraid to associate themselves, as if maybe the association is already there. But who knows, you know, but there's definitely a fear to associate.
Listen to what you just said.
there is a fear to associate.
Yes.
If there is anything, ladies and gentlemen, that the gospel of peace and the gospel of grace that we've been sharing for these last 2 hours, that we have been sharing for these this last quarter century, that we've been sharing for this last 6+ years on this radio show, if there is anything that is less true, is a fear to associate. Michael, tonight we've associated ourselves. Let's rehearse this. We have associated ourselves with Osama bin Laden. We've associated ourselves with Mohammed Atta. We've associated ourselves with Pat Robertson. We've associated ourselves with Jerry Falwell. We've associated ourselves with Franklin Graham and Benny Hinn and Marilyn Hickey and Kenneth Copeland and Jimmy frickin' Swaggart. And we've associated ourselves with Yeshua HaMashiach, Jesus Christ. You guys want to be associated with Jesus Christ? I hope you do. Then you got to associate yourself with all these other folks and with Michael Williams. Sorry. That's the problem. That's the problem with people not giving the teaching, the source of where they learn credit, because they will not associate themselves with somebody that in the deep recesses of their soul is less than perfect, less, may I say, as a heterosexual man, less than heterosexual. This is why I told you when you shared with me that you had a momentary glimpse in heterosexuality. I said, Michael, did I not say this? I said, Michael, you cannot switch teams. Did I say that?
Yeah, you were quite concerned.
Yeah, I was very distraught. As a guy that was absolutely steadfast against the encroachment of the gay rights movement in not just the United States, but in all areas of Western civilization. As Pat Robertson talked about earlier on in the radio show that we had for you, it is so critical that people of all backgrounds, of all proclivities, of all inclinations are accepted and included in the atonement of the Mashiach. Do you hear me say that in Hebrew, folks? Mashiach. Deal with that. This is a very, very Jewish concept. This is not a Greek concept. This is not a Christian concept. This is not a pagan concept. This, Michael, this concept is as old as the scriptures. This is as old as Moses. Whoever wrote down the scriptures the first time, as told by Moses or whoever told it, this is a very, very ancient. It predates Christianity. It predates Greek understanding. It certainly predates paganism. It's very, very important. This is why it's important. This is why it's important for those Christian leaders who have had somewhat in their lives an advancement in their soul, an advancement in their lives in the grace of God through Michael Williams. Michael, this is why it's important to recognize it. Because it is an acceptance of our unique equality in Christ. This is why, this has nothing to do with Mike Williams. This is not, it has nothing to do with Glenn Klein. This is not, has nothing to do with Doug Bowman or Greg Ambry or Sean O'Halloran or Jeff Robbins or anybody. This has nothing to do with us. This has everything to do with everyone's equality in the Messiah. This is why it's important. This is why we're asking for your support. This is why we are not embarrassed. This is why we have absolutely no problem asking for your financial help. Because everyone needs to hear of their equality. Everyone needs to hear of their righteousness in the Messiah. I don't care what your background is, what your behavior is, what your ancestry is, what your history is. You are perfect and righteous and holy and blameless
and sinless, sinless in the sight of God. And I got to tell you something, Mikey.
Yeah.
I've been sharing this a long time with my six children. My six children. They don't get it yet. Got to tell you something, man. My kids don't get it yet. My own children. They've known it from all of them, all six of them, prepubescent. They don't get it yet. They get it on some level. Can you relate to that?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. The thing of it is that the gospel is never grandparented in or fathered in. It is a personal experience and a very personal act and a movement on an individual's part.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
The gospel is very personal. The lordship of Christ is not personal at all.
Yeah.
How would you explain that difference?
Well, the difference is just the truth, the magnificence that the gospel has removed the personal aspect out of it so we could be redeemed, and there's nothing but a personal aspect in it so that we could be free to choose. It's not imposed on anyone. But righteousness was imposed. Redemption was imposed. Like it or not, you got it.
Oh, my God. Righteousness and redemption was imposed. That's what was imposed, folks. Sinfulness was not imposed. Not on your side. Not for over 2,000 years. Righteousness was imposed. Sinlessness was imposed. The need to give was not imposed. Holy mackerel. What a difference. I don't even have the number in front of me where you can call to give. Just go to gospelrevolution.com. Jeff has got everything on the website. He's already in for me. We're way over time. Holy. Michael, I love you.
Love you too, Glenn.
I love the guy. I love
it. You guys, too. Thank you so much for participating tonight in every way, whether you called in, whether you gave, or if you just listened. You just don't know what a joy it is to know that that you're listening, and we appreciate it.
And so is the understatement of the week. Thanks, Mikey.
Thank you.
Want to also thank Doug Bowman from the great town of Little Rock, Greg Ambergy from the greater Cincinnati, Ohio area. Want to also thank Jeff Robertson for already correcting the homepage and directing you to how you can give to this effort. We're well on our way. In the yeah, we are. We're going forward. We don't care. We don't care what religion says. We don't care. We don't care. We are going forward with this message of the redemption of the entire planet. Do you understand that the people that we are warring against, whether you are on the side of the United States or on the side of Al-Qaeda, that's pretty clear cut. And you guys know whatever country you're listening in right now, because there are countries right now that are listening that are on the majority, the side of Al-Qaeda. It doesn't make a difference to us which side you're on in that little warfare that's happening right now on the planet. Yeshua, Jesus, the Christ, is on your side 100% of the time. Regardless of where you fall politically, where you fall geographically, you have been found perfect, and everyone that you know, and everyone that you know about, past, present, or future, has been found on the perfect side
of Almighty God. God, that's good news. That is fantastic news.
I've already said goodnight.
I know you did. I want to say goodnight to Sean O'Halloran, our producer, engineer, call screener, and possessor of great patience extraordinaire. Coming to you live right now in the studio of the Bay of the Holy Spirit, and having to admit that I've got to go present Tea and Honey myself tonight to the birthday girl, Carla. Until next time, we'll do it again next week. Let us hear from you this week at freedom@gospelrevolution.com. This is Glenn Klein Online saying, Shalom, everybody!